Welcome to the Dürr conference call. Ralf Dieter, CEO, and Ralf Heuwing, CFO of Dürr AG, will present the Dürr Group's preliminary figures for fiscal 2016, followed by a Q&A session. I will now hand over to Mr. Dieter, CEO of Dürr AG.
Yeah, thank you, and good afternoon or good morning for those of you in the U.S., and welcome everybody. It is a great pleasure to present to you Dürr's preliminary figures for 2016, and I'm joined by my colleague Ralf Heuwing for the 10th consecutive year, and as you know, also for the last time, as Ralf has decided to leave Dürr after our AGM in May. I will start, as always, by summarizing the key highlights and providing an overview of our results for 2016. Ralf will then give you more insights into our financials and the division's performance. And then I will share an overview of the latest developments of our strategy digital at Dürr, some comments on the opportunity in electrical vehicles, and finally our preliminary outlook for 2017. Let's move to page 3. In 2016, we passed many milestones and achieved the 6th record year in a row. Incoming orders, EBIT and net profit reached new all-time highs. Our results for 2016 are all in line with or above our guidance. At HOMAG, we launched the growth optimization program Focus in 2015 and it's progressing well as expected. Incoming orders at HOMAG are above our expectations due to the high demand for automated solutions. The Dürr Group service business grew by a solid 11%. And we are strongly pushing our Industry 4.0 activities throughout the group. The close collaboration with iTAC is bearing fruit as we have already developed a joint IoT platform. Now let's turn to page number 4. Incoming orders increased by 9% FX adjusted, while sales declined by 3% FX adjusted. The decline was expected following extraordinary strong sales realization in 2015, that had been caused by customer-induced project delays. Net profit improved by 13% despite declining sales. Cash flow was up sharply. On page 5, you can see that, as in the past, Q4 was the strongest quarter of the year. Order intake and earnings improved year over year by more than 10% each. As you know, we had to take the Ford Mexico order off our books. We received this order in Q3 2016, and we eliminated it consistently in the same quarter. Accordingly, order intake in Q4 is fully comparable with the previous year. And our cash flow was again very strong in the fourth quarter. Page 6 compares the Dürr Group's targets for 2016 and the figures actually achieved. Once again, we reached all our targets in 2016 and surpassed our goals for incoming orders, ROCE and EBIT margin. Let's move to page 7. Order intake reached €3.7 billion for the first time despite the cancellation of the Ford Mexico order. The markets in Europe and North America were very strong. In China, new orders in the machinery business were up, while order intake in painting technology took a pause as expected after the strong earlier years. The emerging markets contributed 42% to the total new orders, down from 50% in 2015, due to a softer Chinese business as mentioned. Ralf Heuwing will now take you through our financials and the divisions.
Yeah, thank you, Ralf. Ladies and gentlemen, let me continue on page 8. Our gross profit grew by 4%. The gross margin reached a new record level of 24%. This is the result of strong growth in the service business and further productivity gains. R&D expenses were raised by 9% in order to further strengthen our competitive edge, especially in the field of digitization. SG&A costs rose by 7% due to the expenses for various in-house trade fairs, leaving room for potential decline in 2017. Our reported EBIT included extraordinary items totaling -€15 million compared to -€27 million in the previous year. I will show them later in detail. The financial result improved sharply due to two reasons. Extraordinary expenses in connection with the integration of HOMAG in 2015 no longer occurred, while in 2016 non-recurring investment income of €4 million was generated through the sale of an equity interest. This was the final consequence of the sale of Dürr's aircraft business in 2014. Tax expenses in 2015 had included non-recurring expenses of 9 million euros due to the HOMAG domination and profit transfer agreement. In 2016, we had no comparable special items, so we could fully benefit from low tax rates outside of Germany, for example, in China. This led to an overall 13% growth in net profit. On page 10, you see a detailed overview of the extraordinary effects in 2016 by division. This will help you to comprehend our stated EBIT and the operating EBIT baseline for 2017. Let's now move on to page 11. Operating cash flow increased by 54 million euros to 227 million euros. As usual, the fourth quarter was the strongest quarter in the year, and free cash flow doubled over the previous year to 130 million euros, reflecting a normalized level of CapEx spending. The overview of our work in process and progress billings on page 12 shows that the payment balance with our customers was basically unchanged at around minus 200 million euros at year end. We consider a level of around minus 100 million euros to be normal, so we should see cash outflows of another 100 million euros in the next quarters. Nevertheless, we expect a more or less stable cash flow in 2017 compared to 2016. Page 13 shows our key financial items. Equity grew by more than 110 million euros to 831 million euros at the year end. Our cash position and our net cash improved sharply as well. ROCE again reached a very high level of 41%. Page 14 shows CapEx of 82 million euros. Two major investments were driven forward in 2016. Completing the new campus site in Southfield, Michigan, and building the new campus in Shanghai, where almost 1,000 Chinese dual employees will move in tomorrow. Further key item on the CapEx agenda was the modernization of IT systems, particularly at HOMAG. Across the group, we expect CapEx spending of around 80 million euros in the years to come. Turning to page 15, business volume and earnings quality across all divisions were encouraging in 2016. Despite the cancellation of the Ford Mexico contract, order intake in paint and final assembly systems came close to the previous year. As expected, sales were down 17%. The 2015 figure had included sales which had originally been budgeted for 2014 but did not materialize due to customer-induced project delays. The operating EBIT margin was 7.2% and came close to last year's figure. Order intake for application technology rose by 8% in 2016. As with paint and final assembly systems, most large orders came from Europe and North America. The operating EBIT margin came to 10.5%, exceeding the previous year, despite lower sales and reaching the upper end of our target corridor of 9.5% to 10.5%. Order intake in the Measuring and Process Systems division rose sharply by 18%, reaching an extraordinarily high figure of 683 million euros. Against the backdrop of globally favorable business conditions, China and North America in particular stood out. Sales rose from quarter to quarter, rising by 3% over the year as a whole. The EBIT margin came to 12.8%, thus exceeding the previous year as well as the 10 to 11% target corridor for 2016. Clean Technology Systems achieved a steady development in incoming orders and sales. EBIT climbed from 5.8 to 6.1 million euros. It was, however, burdened by additional project-related expenses arising in Q4 in connection with the implementation of a new solution for exhaust air purification technology. Energy efficiency technology fell short of the forecast. We will be adopting structural measures in 2017 to improve the earnings situation in the business field. I will go into more detail in woodworking machinery and systems on page 16. HOMAG again achieved strong top-line growth of 10% in 2016. Demand accelerated over the year and came from all regions, particularly from China and North America. Automated furniture production solutions grew particularly strong. Operating EBIT rose by as much as 13% to 71 million euros, resulting in an operating EBIT margin of 6.6%. In Q4, the operating margin came in at only 5%, reflecting a more conservative accounting approach. Our strategy, One HOMAG, which means one face to the customer and global alignment across all HOMAG entities, is taking another important step. All products will be presented under one HOMAG brand only. As a consequence, we have written off the asset value of all sub-brands in Q4 2016, with a negative effect of approximately 12 million euros. Now we'll hand back to Ralf Dieter, who will outline our service business, summarize the progress of our strategy Digital at Dürr in H2 2016, and provide you with our outlook of 2017.
Yeah, thank you, Ralf. Ladies and gentlemen, page 17 shows another highlight of our 2016 figures, the service business. We were able to boost service sales by 11% to just under 1 billion euros. Thus, we are moving closer to our midterm target of a 30% service share in the group's total sales. Margins continue to be at a favorable level, and in 2017, the service business is expected to reach single-digit growth again. We outlined our digital strategy to you in detail at our Investors' Day in June last year, and page 18 and 19 present the first important innovation arising from the joint activities of Dürr and iTech. The iTech IoT suite is Dürr's new Industry 4.0 and MES platform. This state-of-the-art software combines the best of Dürr's and iTech's competencies in a single product. Dürr's know-how in shop floor processes and suitable applications, and iTech's IT and big data expertise. The iTech IoT suite controls and optimizes networked industrial production processes. Production data is tracked, compared, and analyzed. This is a basis for new service models such as remote diagnostics and predictive maintenance. The iTech IoT suite covers all steps of the value-added chain in an automobile factory, from the press shop to the final assembly line. Let us now proceed with page 20. The automotive industry is on the verge of major changes. The powertrain alone will undergo substantial change over the next years. According to experts' forecasts, electrical vehicles will account for 75% of global new registrations by 2030, meaning that more than 100 million electrical vehicles per year might be produced by then. A figure of 16 million will already be reached in 2020. New players will enter the market, while existing OEMs will retrofit and modernize their factories. This will generate new business potential for Dürr. New production methods will be needed, in final assembly in particular. We are currently implementing a very innovative assembly line with a substantially higher degree of automation. It is based on a so-called brick concept, which will eliminate two-thirds of the previous assembly stations. At the same time, space requirements will be much lower. Several OEMs have already expressed strong interest in this kind of assembly systems for electrical vehicles. Let's turn to page 22. As you know, there has been a change in our management team. Dr. Jochen Weyrauch joined us on January 1st, 2017, and has taken over the responsibilities for the Measuring and Process Systems and Clean Technology Systems Division, as well as for IT and corporate development. We are planning an investor day in autumn, which will focus on measuring and process systems in Darmstadt. This will give you also an opportunity to personally meet Dr. Weyrauch, who is an experienced top manager and knows Dürr very well, as he was with me in the board of management of Schenck from 2003 to 2005. Mr. Grossetto will be Dürr's new CFO from March 1st, 2017. He has many years of international experience, particularly in Asia, and held senior management positions in the finance area for many years. He is also very closely acquainted with the automotive industry. Ralf, who will be leaving Dürr at his own request, will be touring the main financial centers together with Mr. Grossetto in March and April to ensure a smooth handover of investor relationships. You will be receiving an invitation for this in the near future. Ladies and gentlemen, let's move on to our outlook. Page 23 sets out an overview of the PwC forecast, showing that global automotive production is expected to expand at a combined annual growth rate of 4% through 2021. Two-thirds of this growth will be generated in the emerging markets, with China in the lead. Europe and North America are in a very solid state. Most of our customers show healthy profits and cash flows. Let's turn to page 24. Contributing 83% of sales, the furniture industry is HOMAG's most important market. The global furniture market is growing at close to 4% per annum. China is by far the largest market with a share of 45%, much of which, however, is still manufactured in a less automated fashion. The construction elements and wooden houses markets show grow at around 3%. The political changes of the last few months are making it even more challenging to predict how 2017 will develop. Our forecast assumes that the global economy will continue to grow, that no economic dislocations occur, and that the political environment remains reasonably stable. The sale of the Dürr EcoClean Group announced in 2016 to the Chinese SBS Group is expected to be completed effective March 31st this year, meaning that Dürr will no longer be reporting any sales and earnings contributions from this business from the second quarter onwards. With around 850 employees, EcoClean generated sales of around 200 million euros and an EBIT of 14 million euros in 2016. And despite the new baseline, Dürr currently expects more or less unchanged sales of 3.4 to 3.6 billion euros and an order intake of 3.3 to 3.7 billion euros in 2017. The target range for the EBIT margin is 7.5% to 8.25%, including the non-recurring income of an expected 25 million euros from the sale of Dürr EcoClean. Assuming an unchanged tax rate, net profit for the year should be up on 2016. Ladies and gentlemen, before inviting you to ask your questions, let me briefly summarize. We are fully on track in 2016, achieving our sixth consecutive record year. We reached or exceeded our guidance, as was the case with incoming orders and earnings. Our outlook is stable despite a number of mixed signals which we must observe carefully. We expect an increase in net profit and a stable cash flow. We are expanding our successful service business and are leveraging the growing modernization potential. And we are implementing our strategy Digital at Dürr with the ambition of ranking as one of the leading companies in the field of digital production processes. In the medium term, we will continue to grow via acquisitions. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your attention so far. And as usual, there will be no press and analyst calls when we publish our annual report on March 17, 2017. Our year-end closing is already stable enough for us to be able to give you most of the key figures today. We will be pleased to answer any questions you might have about the annual report over the phone after it is published. So now we are happy to answer any questions you may like to raise. So I hand over back to Jasmin.
Thank you. Dear participants, we will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. First question we have received is from Ingo Martin Schache, Commerzbank. Your line is now open.
Thank you. I have three questions. The first one would be on the very strong growth rate in services, and I would like to ask you whether you could give us a bit more detail around the geographic mix of the growth. Was it more driven by the emerging markets and conversion of new installed base, or did you see a stronger growth rate in North America where utilization was quite high, or just very broad-based global service business growth? Second question is on measuring and process systems. Obviously, you do have a new board member for that now, but you also had a very strong performance in 2016 already, and I think in many of our models, it's hard to imagine that performance can get much better from here. So I was just wondering whether you could already give us some indication in which direction you and also the new board member is thinking when it comes to the midterm vision for measuring and process systems. Do you think more margin expansion is possible from the current level or organic growth, or is it more something where you are, let's say, happy about safeguarding the current very strong status quo, or even something where you want to grow externally? And the last one, just very quickly, on one-off items in 2017, could you give us some guidance on the one-off effects beyond PPA that we should expect at HOMAG and also if significant in energy efficiency and clean tech systems?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schachel. Ralf Dieter speaking. First of all, the service growth rate, and that's for us a very good news, is nicely distributed around the world. And we have pushed this in all our locations, in all our subsidiaries, and so we can't say that there's a special effect from one market. So that's the good news. board member, the new board member for MPS. You're right. We had a very good performance in MPS, but it will also increase by the fact that EcoGlean will not be part of that, because their performance in EBIT was relatively lower than the MPS. So we will see an improvement. And since Jochen Weyrauch just has arrived, I think there is no change in the strategy. Potential acquisitions could be, but this is part of our group activities anyway. So don't expect, let's say, surprises or big changes there. And Homer, Ralph?
Yeah, you were asking about any one-offs in 2017. At the current moment, we expect the same level of PPA effect at HOMAG, so that's no news. And we also expect the book gains from the EcoGlean disposal in the order of magnitude of 25 million euros plus. And beyond that, we have no clear view at this point whether there will be any other one-offs.
But in terms of what's, for example, included in your full-year guidance, would you say that if there's a small double-digit amount of restructuring expenses and clean tech systems and HOMAG that's covered by the guidance?
Yeah, we do not foresee a double-digit one-off. Yeah, if we restructure any of our energy efficiency measures, that should be in the range of a single-digit item.
Okay, thank you.
Pleasure.
The next question we have received is from Jack O'Brien, Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Congratulations on the results. Just if we step back a bit, just trying to get to grips with your guidance for 2017. You had strong results in 2016, but the margin guidance feels a little disappointing. If we strip out the EcoClean benefit, you've guided to a 6.8 to 7.5% margin versus 7.6% in 2016. So I'm just trying to understand the sort of year-on-year headwinds you expect, whether that's from pricing or other factors like raw materials, etc.
Mr. Brian, was a little bit difficult to understand you, but I think we got your question in a way that our conservative, or as you say, disappointing guidance. I mean, first of all, we have to swallow that EcoGlean is not part of the group anymore, and in this time of the year, we always have conservative guidance, and that's what we always do. So I would not call it disappointing. I would just call it, at the moment, conservative.
Perhaps you can help us on the raw materials benefit you saw in 2016. You mentioned in the statement that there was a 13% decline in the cost of materials. So I think I read back in 2015 you had about 1.6 billion of raw or materials costs, so that would imply a sort of 200 million year-on-year benefit you saw in 2016. How should we think about that going into 2017 from an operating profit perspective, given rising sort of raw mat costs?
Yeah, I mean, partly, of course, the reduction in input costs is parallel to the revenue decline. That's of course, clear. Then we also did some insourcing and some productivity gains as well. So for the time going forward, we should grow our material costs in line with revenues, and otherwise we don't have any particular guidance on that aspect for 2017.
Okay, perhaps if I could just go back to the first question, actually, if I may, on your conservatism. I mean, what sort of headwinds are you sort of baking into those forecasts in terms of maybe the painting margins or other such factors? Because it just feels, you know, orders are up 7% year-on-year, service was up as well. I would have slightly expected your guidance for 17 to be above your 16, and in fact it's below. So I'm just trying to get to grips with the factors there.
Mr. O'Brien, I can only repeat that at this time of the year we have conservative guidance. We see potentials, but as always, when we see them closer, then we also are happy to change our guidance later in the year. But at the moment, we take a conservative look at this.
Okay, understood. Thanks very much.
Yes, sir.
The last question we've received is from Alexander Hauenstein, DZ Bank. Your line is now open.
Hello, Alexandre and Lisa Bank. Three questions, if I may. First of all, also coming back to the guidance, may I ask in which of the divisions you may see some kind of margin pressure here coming up in 2017? Maybe you could give us some idea here, because actually the absolute level of EBIT has approached relatively comparable levels within three of the five divisions. So I would like to get a certain flavor where potentially the margin could come a bit under pressure. Second question with regard to the order intake guidance, 3.3 to 3.7 billion is, in my view, a quite wide range. Could you please share here some of the underlying assumptions or ideas here, how to think about it? I mean, what must happen to reach the upper end and what must be the prerequisite for coming in at the low end? Maybe some idea here where the barriers are to the up and to the lower end. And last question, in light of the new U.S. administration, do you expect many of your clients shifting investment plans from Mexico to the U.S., like you've seen recently with one of them? And what could be the impact for your orders and margins in such cases here? Any deferrals, any other alternative ideas here from your client side? Do you expect here to be a beneficiary, or do you expect here to see further headwind? Thanks.
Yeah. Sunshine, your first question, our guidance, first of all, we see in the PFS division that here we have more pressure, also due to the fact that some of our competitors are pretty empty in their loading, because we got, and you can, that's our, the backside of the record order intake is also that we took a lot of business from them. So that's the only one. The others we expect to go straight forward, and so APT and MPS are pretty straight, and we see potential of increase in HOMAXON and in the CTS division. The order intake guidance at this time of the year is 3.3 to 3.7. We don't know better from today's perspective. I think we also changed our order intake guidance last year when we have a better visibility. But your question is, what is it depending? I think we are also dealing with a lot of new, some new electrical vehicle players, new OEMs coming up. We are in contact with them. We are planning with them. But I'm not sure whether all of them are really then at the end have the money or do the investment. And that's also part of the wide range. I think end of second quarter we will have a much better view on that. And your question regarding whether if the administration of the U.S. will shift more from Mexico back to the U.S., we don't see that, and first of all, we don't expect it, and the projects we have in Mexico are going to be continued. And again, this order from Ford in Mexico was not due to the U.S. administration. It was just due to the calculation of Ford that the product they wanted to place in Mexico was not selling very well anymore, and they decided not to realize this plant. That's the real background of this decision. And all the other investments in Mexico are going on forward. And by the way, if the plan will not be realized in Mexico, if that will ever be the case, it doesn't matter for us whether it's in Mexico or the U.S. We are happy to do this in both countries.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, within the press, if one would have sticked a bit into there, one could have heard about the real idea behind that, but actually it felt a bit like they were reacting to the Trump administration. Nevertheless,
No. This was in the press, but I was talking to the board of Ford. I know the real background, yeah?
No. I believe that because I heard similar things in the aftermath. But so it wouldn't, even if there would be a shift more towards U.S. Facilities compared to Mexican or other some Middle American facilities, would there be any kind of difference in the margin quality in this kind of project?
No. The answer is no, because these customers are global and we have global purchasing and it doesn't matter.
Okay, thanks for clarification.
Pleasure.
Next question we've received is from Michael Schramm, HSBC. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Richard Schramm from HSBC. Just a question. This new concept you mentioned for EV assembly, so I didn't get right, but if this is really only a concept or if you are already doing developing work and if there are real products already standing behind this, and in what time frame do we have to think here when these products are coming to the market, and what kind of volume you might expect here connected to this? Can you shed a bit light on this thing? Thanks.
Yeah, it's not a concept. It was a concept last year. This year it's reality. We are just installing this new assembly line at an electrical, with a pure electrical vehicle manufacturer in California. And this concept is basically of interest because we talk to many OEMs about their future electrical, pure electrical vehicle plans and their ideas. And to summarize that, a pure electrical vehicle will be easier to assemble because it's less complex, and therefore you can have a higher degree of automation, something that our customers are looking for a long time for, because final assembly is still a very man-intensive process. And in this new concept, we have new conveyor technology and in particular, a higher degree of automation and much less, let's say, assembly stations due to the less complexity of the car. So at the moment, we are talking to other OEMs, but before, I mean, we don't give you an outlook for this particular product, but I think their plans about those plans are more in the future. Let's talk in 2018, 19, and onwards. But for us, it's important to be at an early age, an early stage, be involved as an innovation leader who can here give a valuable input.
And in total, your statements concerning electric vehicles sound generally quite positive. Do you think really that this can give an impetus to your automotive-related business, or will it be at the end of the day only a zero-sum game, and that you will lose then with the original traditional OEMs on the other side, so that sheer volume is not growing at all and the trend remains sluggish?
To be honest with you, that's a good question, but I'm maybe not the right person to answer. There are experts in the automotive industry who know better, but let's assume it's a zero-sum game, but still you will have the potential. The existing OEMs have to change their plans. At the beginning, you will see plants where they have mixed assembly between, let's call it, normal cars or traditional cars and electrical vehicles, and they will turn, if the volume increases, to plants where they have pure electrical vehicles. And this could be brownfield projects for us or could be greenfield, who knows. What I see is additional potential by this new, let's say, market entrepreneurs who have announced to produce a car, mostly in China or California, and this kind of players are additional potential.
Okay, thank you.
Pleasure.
Next question we have received is from Peter Roteneicher in Baader Bank. Your line is now open.
Yes. Hello, gentlemen. One question regarding your business in China. So your expectations regarding recovery in demand from China has obviously not materialized so far. What is your view? When do you expect here a recovery? Is it already to come in the first or second quarter 2017? What is your general view here on potential demand from China? And overall, how would you characterize here your project pipeline in paint and final assembly systems? Then secondly, on the cancelled Ford order, do you expect here some compensation for the work you already have done, so lost perhaps in earnings contribution? Has this already booked then in the fourth quarter, or is there something to come then in 2017? Then could you share already with us your expectations for the EBIT margins and the bandwidth which you usually publish for the single business areas? And last question, you currently have a huge cash pile on your balance sheet, even also net liquidity is quite good and will definitely further expand. Is there something bigger to come in terms of acquisition, and what is your time frame until you have to show something, or then take other decisions to distribute perhaps cash to your shareholders?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Odenreich. First of all, you're right. Last year we were expecting some increase in the fourth quarter. We had a paint job order in the fourth quarter, so it was a little bit picking up compared to a very slow first half, but not in significant numbers that you would have seen that. But it was picking up. I was in China last week talking to some of our customers. The situation is they had a very successful growth in last year. But let's say the Western OEMs are still working on new product launches, because I told you last year that the China market has turned very much towards SUV, and some of our customers had not the right offering for the market. And they expect that to launch in late this year and in 2018, because, as you know, you can't develop a car overnight. At the same time, we have good order intake from the local Chinese brands who have SUV orders, and so we are enjoying here quite good business. And that's why, for example, in the MPS division, in end of line, in filling, and we had a record here in China, also due to the fact, and also APT had a good order intake from those local Chinese OEMs last year. We see the situation as follows. At the moment, the OEMs are watching the monthly sales figures. They can all calculate when they are, and we built a lot of factories in the last year, as you know, when they are being to be filled. And then the question is, what is about the optimism about 2018-19 to make decisions for this period after that? We have, let's say, quite two secure projects for the fourth quarter, which are quite significant, which we know already will be awarded, and also to us, so we are very optimistic. We are quoting, for example, this week, two paint shops for electric vehicles in China. So I would say at the moment we expect a level on last year with an upside potential, but this is too early in the year to give you a clear forecast on that. For the Ford order, I was there in the second week of January with the board, and they have promised us, and that they always keep their promise, a clear compensation, so we will not have any problem or any EBIT effect on that cancellation. Actually, the opposite. And EBIT by division, we will announce on the 17th of March in our annual report. We give guidance also for divisions. Okay.
And the last question regarding cash.
Ask for an acquisition, yeah. Sorry. First of all, we have no larger acquisition in the pipeline. We are not working on one. As we always say, it's a question of opportunity when it will come up. Today we have nothing on the plate. It could come up, but we are not, let's say, are not stressing us with that, because at the same time, at the moment, the prices for our companies are very high, as you know. The multiples are huge, and so we have to be careful with that. And let's see later in the year if something comes up or not. But we see that quite relaxed. I think it's a question of opportunity.
And is there a time frame when you would think about paying cash to shareholders via share buyback, higher payout ratio or something?
From today's perspective, not this year.
Okay.
And I think I will keep that perspective. Okay.
Have your question been answered?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you, John. You forgot to ask.
The next question we've received is from Jasko Terzic, Metzler. Your line is now open.
Yes, me also on China and electric vehicles. When I remind me on your last statements, I think that from 2018 on, China's planning to have a high share of electric vehicles already in the market, so that would mean that you need to see some orders in 2017 already. So could you give us more details on this issue, and in particular as the ramp-up is strong until 2020 regarding this issue? Secondly, could you give us some details regarding electric vehicles outside of China? So what is happening in Europe? What is happening in the U.S.? And yes, and finally, regarding EVs, are you talking about final assembly with regards to more automation, to have a new product offering, or is it also regarding paint shops?
Okay, last question first. Paint shops are already nearly to a high degree automated, so we are talking about final assembly, which is still today not so much automated. We talk about final assembly. And when we talk now about electric vehicle, because that's a synonym for also hybrid cars, we only talk about pure electric vehicles, just battery cars. And for sure, China is at the moment a hot place for that, but also the Western OEMs, as you all know, have plans or are working on those cars, and because in the beginning, and you know, there's a high uncertainty how many cars will be sold, what is the real demand for that. There's a lot of statistics and forecasts, but all the forecasts in the past were wrong. So everybody is careful about the volume. So we expect, and that's the result also of our talks, that many of those Western OEMs will build those cars in existing plants. So there will be maybe some refurbishment need, but not much more. From my perspective, in China it's different due to the effect of these new players which are investing in new plants. But those plants have a small volume. They're always starting with a small volume to test the market and later have a bigger investment. So a paint shop for such a startup, let's call it, it's maybe one third in the volume like a normal paint shop, which is 80 to 100 million. Those paint shops are 40, 50 million max. And so we have maybe to sell two to get a normal old one with a high volume for the same kind of order intake or revenue. So the activities in China, as I said, outside of China, they are working on this, but I don't expect a lot of new factories for that. It's the same for the U.S., some in California, as you know, but there are a lot of plans out there, a lot of announcements. That's why we are also careful with the order intake. Let's see what's really materializing during the course of the year. I think in summer we have a better visibility on that. Is that okay for you?
Maybe a follow-up on EV. And I also remember the questions regarding new...
We can't, sorry, Mr. Dutty, we can't hear you.
Yeah, maybe asking you to also participate in that and financial issues. Could you give us an update?
Mr. Tepsik, sorry, we can't hear you. Your line is very,
sorry. I just wanted to know regarding EVs that the discussions recently were on financing very hard. And also that some were asking that you could participate in production. So could you give us an update on this issue?
Yeah, this was one particular case, but we don't see that as a trend.
Okay, thanks, very helpful.
So I think if somebody wants to build a plant, he has to have the money. Otherwise, it's not worthwhile to talk. We had one experience, and I think we have a competitor who got an order which has been cancelled because it was just an order of an idea but not really the money behind. So we don't want to. So we are very carefully checking on that as much as we can before we spend our resources on quoting, which is a lot of effort.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
The next question we have received is from Philippe Laurent, Berenberg Bank. Your line is now open.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my question. Actually, I had, was asking for some precisions regarding your guidance for the margin, and I had a look at your current investor relations presentation, and it seems like you give already some color on what you are expecting by division. My question was just, with the range you provide so far for paint and final assembly system, does it take into account that there is still a, small pricing pressure that you feel from customers, or let's say a normalization of prices in the automotive trend? And then the second question would be on HOMAG there, where you seem to guide the 6 to 7% margin. I was just wondering if it was including the PPA or not.
Okay, last question was HOMAG, whether it's including PPA or not.
Yeah, it is after
PPA. So it's operational EBIT. I think we make the segmentation operational that we don't look at the special effects all the time.
Okay, thank you.
And the first question, as I said before, the pressure particularly in the PFS division is higher due to the lack of orders with our competitors. So that's what we are anticipating, at the moment.
Okay, thank you very much. So that means, just to bounce back on HOMAG, that you expect a big step up in margin actually now in 2017 from about 4% to 6 to 7%. Or that's wrong.
The HOMAG actually, as we are also stating, is showing quite a bit of one-offs in the year 2016. And so if we take a margin improvement on an operating basis and then subtract the usual PPA then you get towards that kind of range.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for the clarification.
Pleasure.
The next question we have received is from Herr Junghans of the Securities Bank. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. I have just one question left of my list. It regards your guidance underlying FX rate assumption. I mean, what is your assumption here in terms of dollar, euro for the next fiscal year? Thank you.
We usually don't take a very strong view on currency exchange rates. It's more or less unchanged to the current situation. Yeah, and if you actually backtrack our FX impact, you will see that we have a strong natural hedge. On top of that, okay. we hedge effectively. So I would not base any decision very much on FX relations.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much on that. Thanks.
Pleasure.
The next question we have received is from Alexander Hauenstein, DZ Bank. Your line is now open.
Yes, hello, it's me again. I have a follow-up question on application technology. If I see it right, you had in Q4 quite a strong result on the EBIT line. Do you remind me, was there any one-time effect here which I overlooked maybe, or what was the reason for that, and how should we expect the development going forward here over the quarters? Thank you.
We have disclosed the types of different special effects, and application technology had indeed an extraordinary gain from legal disputes. So if you look at the underlying performance, you see that it was somewhat better than in the year 2015.
Okay, so this was the 12 million you referred to before? I didn't get that properly before.
Yeah, I think the overall positive impact was 17, and roughly 5 was from the sale of U.S. real estate, and about 12 from the gain from a legal dispute.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Got it.
The next question we have received is from Michael Schramm, HSBC. Your line is now open.
Yes, sir. I have also a quick follow-up on this one-off, impairment you mentioned for HOMAG, this write-off of sub-brands. I think it was 12 million, the amount you mentioned. Is it a goodwill impairment, or where do we see this write-off, and is it the full amount, or is there still some amount left and at risk possibly in the future? Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. No, I can explain. When we acquired HOMAG, we of course did a proper purchase price allocation, and part of the purchase price was allocated to the value of the brands. And these included both the value of the brand HOMAG, which is the majority, and then the value of the smaller brands, such as Weke, brand Holzma, etc. And in the context of merging our brand presence or brand strategy into one HOMAG, we had to write off the value of those smaller brands. To zero, actually, so there's no further impact in the future. This is, of course, only a book entry. It's sort of reversing the purchase price allocation in some sense, but not any cash-related impact.
Okay.
Is that clear?
Yeah, and the amount was 12 million. That's 11, correct, right?
11.9.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
The next question we've received is also a follow-up from Jasko Terzic. Metzler, your line is now open.
Yes, just one follow-up on MPS again, because to me the margin is very, very strong. Could you give us some more details? What are the drivers behind the strong Q4? And then also looking into 2017, and you explained it in part by the omission of clean technology systems. However, if I look at the backlog, if I see your Q4 margins, why should one not expect to see a strong surge in margins in 2017?
First of all, the very strong margins you have seen by the strong order intake increase, so we have effects out of, not overloading, but let's say, because overutilization, which has a positive effect. You're right, the backlog is good, so we are optimistic about the MPS, but we still give a conservative outlook.
Okay, thank you.
I hope it answers your question.
Partly. I think that's the best answer I could get.
You get a better one in summer, okay?
Okay.
There are no further questions at the moment. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now.
Seems not to be the case.
We've received two more questions if you would like to take them.
Yeah, sure.
Perfect. And the next question we've received is from Christian Kortz, Warburg Research. Your line is now open.
Yes, thanks for taking my questions. A couple of one, actually. First of all, in clean tech, you mentioned that some business areas are developing worse than expected, and I wondered, do we have to expect any write-downs maybe on an asset or intangible values? Secondly, R&D expenses have gone up 9% last year. Is this the new normal? Is this figure sustainable for the years to come, or should we? Or is this more a temporary phenomenon? Thirdly, service. You mentioned the 30% target. You're quite close to it. First of all, to what extent will the disposal of the cleaning business change the picture? And secondly, is the 30% threshold the end of the game, or is there more to come? And lastly, I think 1 or 2 years ago, you launched the industrial product business within the application technology segment. At that time, it produced no profits, but small losses. Now, with some quarters passed, how is this business developing, and is it already meaningful for the overall group performance?
Okay, a lot of questions. I think DTS the first one. Ralf.
Yeah, I already mentioned that we might see a possible write-off, but that's not clear yet. And if that were the case, then it would clearly only be a single-digit million euro figure.
Mm. Second question: R&D expenses increase. That's sustainable. We will not reduce that. We can say 8 to 10% out of that is related to digital and do already. So the number I will see stable. But we are not intending to increase it further at the moment with strong growth on that side. So it should be pretty stable. The 30% service target. The EcoClean disposal will maybe hit that number by 30 to 40 million, which is not really a big number, in the context of 1 billion. So we will not really have that. Is that target the end? Well, it's easy to increase the percentage by just taking less new orders, but that you also would not like. So we do both. So I think we have not a fixed target. If it's 35, it's also fine, yeah? And I think 30% is a goal in which we say then we have a very strong impact by the service business to our bottom line. And I think we are pretty close to that and very satisfied with it. Let's grow it further. Industrial product, today, you're right. So far, it was not producing positive EBIT because that was the plan and was expected. We are ramping it up. It's now 30, 35 million business and will be this year break even. And then we want to increase that in the year 2018 to following years. But we see also a strong fight from the existing players because they don't like it so much that we enter this market. And at the moment, our strategy is to gain market share and not to concentrate on maximizing also profits of it. They come afterwards anyway because of this very profitable spare part business out of this business.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Pleasure.
The last question we have received is from Daniel Klein, MainFirst. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much for taking my questions. The first one is actually on HOMAG Q4. I think you mentioned you were more conservative in the accounting approach. What would be the like-for-like margin if you not had changed the accounting? That would be the first question related to HOMAG. And the second one is, could you provide a little bit more detail on what actually happened? What was the motivation and how material has it really been? Yeah.
Yeah, I would think the EBIT margin could have also been 100 to 150 basis points higher in Q4. And it's just reviewing integrated projects, factory projects, where we took a more conservative approach to evaluating the likely profit out of it. Whether or not that will then actually materialize in the execution, we will see.
And this is also the approach you're taking in 17, I assume.
Yeah, the sales realization out of such projects would be in 17. Yeah.
I mean the accounting approach.
The approach. Well, that is. I would say that is really depending on how these projects are developing. Yeah. So we have a project management and project controlling procedure in place, and if we feel that we should take a bit more care for possible additional costs, then we would do that. That's our normal procedure.
And just to make sure I understood you correctly, you said 100 to 150 basis points higher margin if you had not changed the accounting.
Yeah.
We have not changed accounting. We have had a very conservative view on some large system projects. Yeah. You can also see the backlog of HOMAG is double than the year before, and so the factories are fully loaded, and we have timelines to fulfill, and here we are taking a more careful approach because it's a big challenge for HOMAG this year to work down all this pipeline in order to deliver on time as the customer expects, and here to provide some, let's say, risk coverage, we have been more careful with this larger projects. That's all. No change in accounting.
All right. Thank you very much. Very prudent on that end. Maybe the second question is on the order book quality for the entire group, end of 16 versus end of 15. Would you say the margin quality, factoring in mix and so forth, is better, equal, or worse?
I think fortunately it's unchanged, and that was also for us a very good news because we had already told you last year that we expect more pressure on margins, and we were very satisfied that we could keep that. And in terms of the mix, it's similar, so it has the same quality.
All right. And maybe one follow-up question on slide number 20, where you kindly provided the expected ramp-up in the electric vehicle registration going forward. I'm trying to translate this into a likely CapEx plan for the OEMs, and more importantly, given that you don't have the full breadth of the market, but you're concentrated on a couple of OEMs.
No. We are working with all OEMs. The exception is only some of the Japanese. And these numbers here are including hybrid cars, and it's not from us because, as I said, we are not the experts. These statistics here are from PwC and some own calculations. Okay.
So when we talk about the entire market, then because this is your end market as well, how would you expect the ramp up in the production capacities to sustain these volumes? Is it more like end of 17 and 18 for the 2020 ramp up, or do you expect the bulk of the EV orders after 18? How do you think this is going to evolve?
To make it simple, when you give us an order today for a new paint shop or a final assembly plant, you can calculate that in 2 years from now you can produce.
Okay. So 18 would be then the order intake for you, yeah?
Yeah, for example, yeah, exactly. But don't make the mistake and say these numbers are additional numbers or additional production production sites. This will also happen in existing plants.
Understood. Maybe one last question. You made a divestment of EquiClean this year. Is there likely to be something to be further divested in the following year, or is the existing portfolio the core portfolio, so to speak?
You gave already the answer. We have no plan to divest next year, and the portfolio as we have it now is what we want.
All right. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
There are no further questions at the moment. I would hand back to you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you very much. We are very pleased that we had so many questions today. And so thank you very much for asking those. And I hope we could answer them to your satisfaction. We enjoyed it very much, as always. And Ralf, since this is your last conference call, I would like to leave today the last words for you, just to say not bye-bye, because many of these people you meet again in the next weeks. But maybe some last words here for today's call.
Yeah, thank you, Ralf. Of course, I look back to 10 really outstanding years at Dürr, and also together with Ralf Dieter, for which I'm really grateful. And I will be meeting some of you during the next weeks on a roadshow to personally hand over relationships to Carlos Cossetto. And for all others, I would like to thank you for your continued support and trust and your long-standing relationship with us. And please extend this trust also to my successor and to my board member colleagues. I think this is very well appreciated. Thank you and bye-bye.
I think I have to say one thing. I'm still not in a farewell or bye-bye mode with him because he stays here up to May, so I don't like the idea to talk about that, but I can take this opportunity when we are still together on this call to thank you very much for 10 years, which we had a great time together, a great understanding and a great teamwork. And but I also fully understand and accept Ralf's decision. In the age of 50, I also had some thoughts what I should do. I decided to stay. That's why I'm still here. He decided a different way. That's fine. Totally accept it and appreciate it. And we stay friends and everything is fine. And I think the new board team with Carlos Grosseto and Jochen Weihrauch, we are well positioned for the next decade of Dürr. And then I can only say please support also Carlo Grosseto in his job. And I think we will see Ralf in a different capacity. And maybe then I can join next time your conference call. You do. All right. Thank you very much for everybody's joining us today, and have a nice afternoon or whatever, rest of the day, wherever you are. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
And thanks, Jasmine.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. The call has been concluded. You may now disconnect.